Frankenstein's Monster, an allegory for everything from science to morality and the creative process itself. But what of the creator of this groundbreaking Gothic ghost story? Mary Godwin, as she was the illegitimate daughter of revolutionary thinker Mary Wollstonecraft and political philosopher William Godwin. Mary had a half-sister, Claire, and according to writer Suzanne Burden, that really was a problem. Burden has written a biographical novel of Mary Shelley called Almost Invincible. What was going on with those two sisters, wondered Michael Cathcart.
So they grew up together, but they were always diverse in personality. And Mary was deemed to be the smart one, if you like. She was the one who, was assumed to have the literary genes. Claire was more inclined towards music and singing. She was a good singer. But the rivalry was there, and it was a very much an important part of Mary's life once she ran away with Shelley, once she met the poet Percy Shelley, and she ran away with him. And they took Claire with them when they ran away, when they eloped.
This is the very, very weird part. So you've got this stepsister who, as you describe it, is the stepsister from hell.
Yes.
I mean, she's vindictive, she's manipulative, she's self-centred, she's a total nightmare. Off Mary Shelley goes with Shelley, who she's formed chums with. So he's this terribly famous romantic poet who's terribly idealistic in his own way, rather self-obsessed in his own way too. But Claire comes along as well, the ghastly sister. What on earth is she doing there?
I don't know. You know, there's no... One of the benefits, of course, of writing an historical novel is that you can reimagine what happened. And really, there is no reason on earth why one could imagine that Mary would have taken Claire with them when they ran away.
Ever since I've known this story, I have thought, why didn't Mary say, if she's coming, I'm not coming. You have to choose. That's what happens in romantic situations from the dawn of time. You say, mate, you say to the fella, it's her or me, my stepsister or me. You cannot have us both. And trust me, she's a bitch.
Mary got to that point a couple of times in her relationship with Shelley. One point she got Shelley to pack Claire off to the seaside to get away from them. That was after she had her first miscarriage. It was a her or me situation. Certainly, you're absolutely right. But so the only thing I could think of was at the time when they ran away, Claire had been very involved in the clandestine relationship. She enjoyed helping them to, you know, pass letters and to walk in the parks with each other so that they were seen to have a chaperone, but they really didn't. And she was very melodramatic, Claire. You know, she always saw everything as focused on herself. And I think that she really was inclined to make a fuss when she saw Mary was going away, and so they took her just as a way of keeping her quiet. And in fact, there was another opportunity when they arrived in France, because Claire's mother, Mrs. Godwin, chased over to France to try and rescue her daughter from this terrible, terrible menage. But Claire chose to stay, and again, Mary didn't manage to object strongly enough to send her back with her mother. So, yes, it was very unfortunate.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. So Percy, who was also unfortunate in having the middle name Bish.
Yes.
I don't know how many Bishes there are in the world. If you're a Bish listening today, I do apologise, but it's always seemed to be a tough one. Anyway, Percy Bish Shelley, he's a man of very radical ideas, and I've always found his ideas very hard to put together, because he seems to believe that writing certain kinds of poetry will change the world.
Yes, he said poets are the unacknowledged legislators of the world. It was very much... He was radical, he was an atheist, you know, in early 19th century England, which was the most terrible thing he could have been. He was charismatic, he was persuasive, he wanted to change the world. You know, he was really very much that sort of character, very, very, very engaging, I think. He was really persuaded, young girl as Mary was, you know, that he had so much to offer.
Let's hear a trailer from the 1931 classic movie Frankenstein, starring Boris Karloff, and then we can talk about how this enters the story.
When this dead hand moves, the monster created by a man they called Mad is turned loose to strike terror into the hearts of men, to shock women into uncontrolled hysteria. to prey upon the innocence of children. The spine-tingling, blood-chilling story that stuns your emotions. Frankenstein.
Don't touch that!
Yeah, I told you not to touch the toaster.
It's gorgeous, isn't it? I have that on my website. It's wonderful.
Goodness, yes. Yes, it makes you want to see the film. Yeah. So how does this enter the story? How does this woman come to be the woman who creates Frankenstein?
The famous story is they were in Geneva on the lake. Byron's Villa Diodote was up high, their little villa was down below, and they went up every night and they sat in the cold and the dark and the rainy days.
Yeah, so Byron, you haven't explained that, so that Byron is there as well, the poet Byron.
Byron is there, yes, I was going to go and say, and even there, you know, the thing that, as I say, one of the threads in my story is this influence of Claire, and even the reason that they were there at Geneva was because of Claire, because Claire had stalked and seduced Shelley in London, and when Byron was going to Switzerland, she persuaded Mary and Shelley to go as well so that they could be introduced and, you know, the famous poets could be together. And in fact, Byron and Shelley got on very well. And so they were sitting there reading ghost stories into the night. And in fact, the other thing I've discovered as I researched the book, and I hadn't realised, was it was always a bit of a puzzle to me why the weather was so awful in July. And it turned out that that was actually known as the year without a summer, because there was a volcano which erupted in Indonesia and sent a pall of black clouds all over Europe. And people were talking about it as an apocalypse. It was a really wonderful setting for a Gothic novel. And so that in that environment, they all wrote ghost stories after a challenge from Byron that they should all write a ghost story. He actually said mine will be published with Mary's. He was very fond of Mary. And Mary's was really the only one that survived, you know, to the extent that it has.
Yeah, well, it's a great story, that one. So given this story and given the intersecting lives of these famous literary people and your knowledge of it and all the research you've done, why did you decide that a novel was the best way to bring this to public light? Why not just write a history?
I guess because when I read the first little phrase which hooked me on the thing, which is when Mary, when she was about 50, said, "Don't leave me alone with her. She's been the bane of my life since I was 3 years old," of Claire. So I set about reading some biographies of Mary, and they're good biographies, but I think Peter Aykroyd said, you know, you need good biographies to create a good novel. And he also said that in biographies you can make things up, but in novels you're obliged to tell the truth. And I felt that I hadn't really quite come to the real Mary. There's so much in her life, so many famous characters, so many incidents. It was like looking for a lost child in Central Station in the rush hour. You know, there was so much going on around that it was hard to come in and focus on her. And I wanted to get that real emotional dynamic and the real emotional truths of it. And also that that relationship with Claire, which was the part that sort of really intrigued me, as you read the biographies, of course, that was always there. Claire was there in this and Claire was there in that. But what I didn't think came through and I wanted to explore strongly was the way that it had impinged on her whole life. It was really, truly an underlying thread. Even when Claire wasn't there, she was there in the distance. You know, even when she was having Byron's baby, that informed all of their decisions. It was the reason they had to leave Geneva and go back to Bath. It was the reason they had to go to Marlow and hide from their family so that nobody knew Claire had had this illegitimate child. It was partly the reason that Mary's daughter died, because they were running around to take Claire's daughter to Byron. Claire was always a figure there in the background, and I felt the only way to bring that out, to sort of cut through and make a single narrative of it that related Mary's life linearly in that way to the relationship with Claire, was through a novel.
It also enables you to go very deep into grief, because it is partly a story about grief.
It is, actually. It is about grief. It's a very modern thing, but you know, Mary suffered enormously from grief, and a lot of the biographies as well just make throwaway comments about her being depressive, having a depressive nature. And after I read some of her story, I thought to myself, my goodness, you know, she has reasons from time to time to be very depressed.
Well, she lost, is it three babies she lost?
She had a miscarriage she lost three babies. One was very young, you know, just a few weeks old. One was 1 year old, one was 4 years old, and then she had another miscarriage. So, yes, she had a lot of reason for grief.
Mm.
It made me feel much more respectful, I guess, of their relationship, the fact that they actually stayed together, they ploughed on through all of those griefs that they had. A lot of the time, both of them lost themselves in their work, of course, in their writing. It was their way of staying sane.
Suzanne Burdon's Almost Invincible is published by Criteria. And you can listen to a longer version of that story online at abc.net.au/rn. Just click on the Books Plus page.